RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Get an RV policy quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV. And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit thetford.com.
And by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head over to jayco.com. And by Campgrounds of America. To find out what's behind the yellow sign, visit KOA.com or download the free KOA app today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are giving tips to campground owners whether they want to hear them or not. We have had some fantastic experiences at RV parks around the country, and we have also had some stays that could have been improved.
We first covered this topic all the way back on episode number 5 of RVFTA, but since then we have camped hundreds of more nights and come up with some more tips. Plus, we have a fascinating interview with our favorite campground owners, Dan and Aaron Thiem of the In-Town Campground. They are going to give us the scoop on developments within the industry.
You might think campground feedback is all about clean bathrooms and Wi-Fi, but we know that there are a lot of other things that make a campground a home run. You are listening to episode 124, 8 more tips for campground owners.
Before we head into this week's featured topic, 8 more tips for campground owners, it's time for our news roundup, which is sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
For many of you, your weekends are spent on the open road. Feel confident knowing that with Progressive's 24/7 roadside assistance, you will never be stranded. In fact, Progressive will tow your RV and your vehicle, even if your vehicle isn't insured with them. Travel without worry. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com/RV today for more info.
Do you think Progressive would tow our new toy hauler all the way to the Florida RV Super Show?
And it would just be there when we arrived. We fly in.
And they'll just leave it there for us.
We can try.
Listen, the biggest news in the RV industry right now is that the Florida RV Super Show is fast approaching.
We are counting down the days.
We are counting down the hours.
Yeah, it's so exciting. Can't wait. Warm Tampa.
It's the third. Well, we hope it's warm Tampa. The people of Tampa are warm, that's for sure. It's the 32nd year of the show. It's January 18th to 22nd at the Florida State Fairgrounds in Tampa, Florida. You can camp on site. There are daily seminars, and there are over 450 vendors. Stop the madness.
Yeah, plus more than 1,400 RVs across 26 acres. Okay, daily entertainment, $10 per ticket. Kids 16 and under are free, and admission is good for 2-day entry. We are going to be there. If you're attending the rally, we will be at the donuts and coffee, the free donut and coffee breakfast. Every morning we'll be there to say hey, so you can stop by. If you're not in the rally, you can't get into that breakfast. It's a little exclusive, but we gave you fair warning on that. But please reach out to us on social media, and we'll be happy to, you know, get together and meet you while we're there around the show.
Now, the best thing about those 1,400 RVs, they're all for sale, too, right? So if you're planning on going and buying something, drop us a note and let us know what you're shopping for, because we're just curious, aren't we?
Yeah, we'd love to hear anybody that's shopping for a very specific thing. If you could reach out and tell us that, we're going to have an entire podcast episode about this show. We'd love to hear what people are shopping for. It'd be good. It'd be great for us.
Absolutely. Now, we are also going to be giving seminars at the Atlantic City RV Show from February 17th to 19th. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have 3 seminars that we are going to be giving: 12 Reasons RV Vacations Are Better, Which RV Is Right For Me, and 10 Amazing Campgrounds in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And I have threatened to make that a baker's dozen.
Of course you have. All right. So definitely another thing, drop us a note if you're going to be by. I think we're going to plan a like Friday night happy hour gathering for podcast listeners at that show. So stay tuned for more info.
Honestly, we would love to say hello and please come to our seminars. Or if you can't make the seminars, let us know you're around.
All right. So now there's something else that I wanted to tell you about. If you are a listener to Girl Camper, which we know a lot of you are, with Janine Pettit on our podcast network, Janine Pettit organizes what are called camper colleges. Okay. And this is where Girl Camper arranges these sort of seminars, basically, at RV dealerships. So the point is to make women more comfortable with the idea of RV ownership and operation and to take the mystery out of ownership, right?
Janine takes the mystique right out of RV ownership and then she just adds the magic.
Right. But it's also helpful for men and couples. So I really wanted to share that. Men are welcome too. It's not just women. So if you're listening to this and you are going to be near Tom's Camperland in Mesa, Arizona, right, on Friday, January 20th and Saturday, January 21st.
Yeah, and show up early so you can take a look at the trailers and then so you can meet and greet with Janine and the other girl campers.
Yeah, so at 5 p.m. On Friday, January 20th, you show up, you look at the trailers, you meet and greet. Then at 6 p.m., there's going to be a demo and Q&A time. Chris Baum, who you've heard on this show, the COO of Go Little Guy, is going to be there. And then on Saturday, there's an all-day open house. Sisters on the Fly are going to be there with their trailers set up. A light lunch is provided. I'm going to put the link to Janine's blog post about this in the show notes. But, you know, I know we have listeners, lots of listeners out there in Arizona. So if you're near Mesa, Arizona, go to Tom's Camperland and say, hey.
Yeah, and I think that Chris Baum from Little Guy Worldwide is one of the most interesting guys in the RV industry, and they're one of the most interesting companies in the RV industry in terms of watching where they go and what they're doing.
Doing something different.
Yeah, I mean, they're on point. They're on the cusp of a lot of different things. So that's really a great night of entertainment for somebody who's interested in RVing.
Yeah, so Friday night, Saturday, I'm going to link to the blog post. Think about it if you're in that area. Now, another thing is that Jeremy got all crazy and put out a blog post this past week.
Well, I've been buried in my teaching and my grading. And this weekend we decided we were going to spend some time on our next book proposal because it's been hard to find time. So I finally put my foot down and said, look, you're going to write for 5 or 6 hours Saturday, and I'm going to write for 5 or 6 hours on Sunday. Then, of course, Saturday it snowed all day long. So I decided to turn it into a big adventure with the boys, and I had an awesome time with them. Came home Saturday night and decided I just had to write about it. So I did a post called Punk Rock Parenting, Pinball, and the Search for Stephanie's Lost Record Collection. And I don't know. I enjoyed the heck out of writing it. It was a fun blog post to do, and I got some nice responses. So please check it out. It's up on our blog.
Yeah, the suspense will kill you until you go over there and click
Did
on
I find
link.
Stephanie's
exactly.
Lost Record Collection or
dun,
not?
Dun, dun. All right. Now, the last thing we want to mention is that we did our very first RVFTA Live, right? It's our new Facebook Friday event. We're doing it at 3 p.m. Eastern time on any day that our boys have school. That's the rule. And we had such a good time this past Friday. We had so many listeners join us. The comments were flying. It was really interactive.
Yeah, I really want to thank everybody that joined. And please, you know, plan on doing it every Friday. And we got a lot of a buzz and enthusiasm from you guys. And we've rescheduled our whole lineup of content around this. So Girl Camper staying on Tuesday. Campground of the Week is going to be released on Wednesday, RVFTA Thursday, and a Facebook Live on Friday. So what are we going to be talking about this Friday, January
13th
on our Facebook Live chat.
Yeah, so this week is about tips for campground owners. So we really are going to, just like we did last week, we're going to extend that topic. We'll throw in a lot of other grab bag things, other comments from listeners during the week on social media, etc. If you have anything that you want to weigh in on about tips for campground owners, join us for that Facebook Live. Or if you're not able to be there live and you watch later, go ahead and send us any comments or questions you have ahead of time in email or on Facebook, and we can totally answer them during that time.
Yeah, it'll be a fun carryover from the podcast, and we can all chat about the topic.
Now, we're going to do a giveaway this week, okay? So we're not going to say what it is. It's a surprise.
I'm going to give a hint. And I didn't tell Stephanie this, but she's like, oh, I don't want to tell everybody. And I'm like, I'm at least going to give a hint. It's to help celebrate the new year, to help celebrate 2017. We have two of them to give away, so it should be fun.
But we're not going to do it until the end of the Facebook live chat. So we'll give it away.
And you just have to show up and drop at least one comment so your name shows up, and then we'll randomly pick two winners. So that's our news roundup for this week. Now, our featured topic this week is 8 more tips for campground owners. We're breaking it into 2 segments. Stephanie and I are going to give 8 fresh tips for campground owners. Then we're going to come back and have a really terrific interview with Dan and Aaron Thiem of the InTown Campground. Dan recently went to a convention for campground owners, and he just picked up a lot of interesting stuff there, and he was willing to talk to us about hospitality and outdoor hospitality in particular. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for our feature topic, 8 more tips for campground owners. But first, it's time for a sponsored message from our friends at the Thetford Corporation, who know a thing or two about campgrounds and camping and RVs.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. Sometimes getting the very best site at a campground means going without a sewer hookup. And this is no worries if you have the smart tote to tank. We stayed at the Platte River Campground in Sleeping Bear Dunes this past summer, and we used it more than once, and it was a great lifesaver. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And I'll never forget this summer when we camped at the Scudic Woods Campground, that somebody was emptying their smart tote too and towing it to the dump tank with their motorcycle.
You got a picture of that.
I got a picture of it. It was sweet. So if you like doing some dry camping or camping without sewer, that Smart Tote 2 is a great product, and it allows you to stay off the grid for a while. Okay, now let's dive right into our 8 tips for campground owners. We first did this show for episode number 5, 8 tips for campground owners.
That was 120 episodes ago.
120 episodes ago. And it was one of my early favorites, and I think it was one of the first ones where we started to really find the voice for the RVFTA podcast. So now we're revisiting it, and we're going to add 8 more tips. So let's quickly summarize what the original 8 tips were.
Yeah, since it's so old, it's a little bit hard to find. It might be hard to dig out of the archive.
It's like finding an old record at the flea market.
It might be a little scratched up.
It's like finding Abbey Road at the flea market.
All right. So these were our 8 tips in our episode number 5. First, explain problematic sites. So we really argued that, you know, it's not a big deal if campgrounds have some sites that are not, you know, the best sites in the place. So in other words, if it's like a little pie slice right next
to the... Or it's unlevel. Or if it's in a weird location. That's okay. Have a site there. Make some money off it. But when somebody reserves it, say, just by the way, you need to know something about this site.
Yeah. So if it's like the last site you want to get the most for those overflow days where somebody calls and they're driving through and you're like, yeah, well, I have one more site left.
But it's right on the superhighway. Yeah. There is 18 lanes of traffic right next to where your head's going to be.
Yeah.
And look, a lot of people will say, you know, no. But then other people will say, okay, we'll take it. And then they won't show up and be angry.
Right. Exactly.
Explain the problems in advance. Our second tip: get rid of the kid tax and charge a higher reservation rate. I think we still both believe that you shouldn't add a fee per night per child.
I have one exception to that with the explosion of the huge resort campgrounds. I understand that. I think they're trying to keep like really large groups from staying on one site. I think that probably happens. So that's my only one exception, is I understand that the bigger resorts with the water park facilities are charging the kid tax.
Yeah, but you know, for a campground that says like for every single child, you're paying like $5 extra a night and you only get the 2 people for free. That's way overboard. Yeah. It's just like...
Just really? Raise your rates.
Raise the rates, because I said in that first show, we're buying more milk, we're buying more ice cream, we're buying stuffed animals in the camp store.
And just have your cap for the number of people that can stay at a site.
And be generous, campground owners.
Yeah, exactly. We have larger families.
Our third tip: charge one price for an activity pass if you can. Bundle your mini golf, bundle whatever, you know, laser tag, whatever it is that you have, and make it one price if possible, if that works for your campground. It sure is convenient for your customer.
I think it should be offered. If you have extras, I think there should always be the option to pay one price for all your kids and have them have access to the extras the whole time. Done.
Number four, we said ditch the bracelets. A lot of campgrounds that we love and have had a great time at make you wear the bracelets. And
I think they're getting more popular.
We've been to campgrounds that make you wear two bracelets.
One for the golf cart, one for the...
say ditch the bracelets.
Yeah, nobody's listening. I think that you should have really good security and keep people out of your campground if they don't belong there.
Number five, we said stock the camp store with the basics. And we told the funny story about how we tried to get ketchup at a campground in North Jersey. And they told us not that they were sold out, but that they don't stock it.
Yeah, it's not worth that.
She literally, the owner said, we don't make enough money selling ketchup.
Yeah, that is one way to just disgruntle the people who brought burgers and forgot something. Campers forget things. Campground owners have those things on hand.
Our sixth tip, if you're going to spend some money, modernize the playground. We don't like showing up and seeing an old, rusty, crusty playground from 1972 that's dangerous.
Yeah, that's really a way to aggravate parents. If you say you have a playground, it better be a good playground that your kids can play at for more than 5 minutes.
The playgrounds that they built back in the 70s, I think, were intentionally built to be dangerous to make kids tougher.
I
think that was an operating philosophy. when I was like 10 years old, I remember my cousin going down one of those slides that have like no sides to them, basically. Mm-hmm. The sides were like 3 inches high, and he fell off the top of the slide, and the kid ended up in the hospital.
Yeah, my sister got her chin split on one of those teeter totters.
I'll be honest, you did that to her.
No, I didn't. I wasn't there.
Seven, and maybe, I don't know, maybe, well, seven and eight are the two most important. Number seven, enforce quiet time hours. If you say quiet time starts at 10, then you actually need to enforce it. Otherwise, you're going to irritate your customers who want to go to bed.
Yeah, the best campgrounds really make sure they have a presence at quiet time and don't allow a couple people who are really looking to party to ruin it for the rest of us quiet folks.
And campgrounds that aren't quiet at quiet time, that usually means that the owner or manager is not on site, mm-hmm. which is a bad thing too.
Yeah. And we've had experiences with like chainsaws at night and things like
people
that.
Like cutting up firewood with chainsaws.
Nobody is running the ship
it's
here.
It's like New Jersey Chainsaw Massacre Part 3.
All right. And our last tip was post and enforce speed limits. There is absolutely nothing. And this was true in episode 5. And you've all heard it from me a million times throughout the course of 2.5 years. There is nothing that drives me more crazy than speeding at a campground where people are walking, playing, you know, dogs are. This is not the place to go fast. And campgrounds need to be responsible for making sure that's true. I stand by that one.
Those were the original 8 tips. And I think they were insightful. I mean, when we were young, we knew what we were talking about.
We did. I think that some of these are like smaller ideas, right? They were the ones that impacted us right away when we were like the bracelets and everything. I think that moving on to our tips.
Are you saying we're going big this year?
I feel like they're more theoretical, right? Like, I feel like they're more infrastructure oriented. They're more about the entire experience from reservations and everything.
There
like
have
that.
Been hundreds of nights of camping since that episode.
And really longer trips too. So I feel like we've gotten such a comparison between what makes an awesome experience and a not so awesome experience. So yeah, I do think there's a difference. I thought that some of these were like very detail oriented. And I think that we went a little more big picture on the ones that we developed this time. So
all right, we're going to come back in a second and give our 8 new tips for campground owners. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for us to talk about our 8 fresh, new, exciting tips for campground owners. But first, it's time for a sponsored message from our friends at KOA, and they know a couple of things about running campgrounds.
Yeah, if you are planning on camping more than once this year at a KOA, then you should sign up for the Value Card Rewards and save. You save 10% on every stay, plus you earn points that you can redeem for even greater savings at KOA. You also get exclusive access to coupons online or via the KOA app to save on retail, dining, entertainment, and special member-only offers from our partners.
And then my favorite part of getting a Value Card Rewards membership is that you get that lovely analog KOA campground directory in the mail in early March. And when you open up the mailbox and the KOA directory is in there on that cold March evening, it's like a ray of sunlight bursts out of the mailbox. And it is the official start of the camping season when you get that directory.
Do you see what I'm dealing with, people? Like, he likes that more than the saving money part. This is an interesting man to be married to.
Max and Theo have been on the cover of the KOA directory. I just remembered right now. And that was long before we ever did any writing for KOA or anything. We just submitted these photos for something, for like a contest. Max and Theo on the cover.
Thank goodness they put them both on, because they were separate pictures.
But Wesley's never been on the cover.
No, but still, it would have been a problem if only one of them had been on the cover. But anyway, we really do save money using this. You all know that we've had our value card rewards for a long time, and we make
and
money off
last
of that.
Summer, I cashed in some points, and we got a free camping trip out of it. Yeah. So those points do add up, and you can get some serious free camping out of them.
Yeah, and you ask every time we pop in to register. You're like, oh, do I have any points on it?
I don't ask every time, because I like the excitement to build up.
You like to build up.
I like to ask and to find out that I have like $80 in free camping or something like that. To
find out what's behind the yellow sign, visit KOA.com or download the free KOA app today.
And remember, when that directory comes, that's the official kickoff of the new camping
Sunshine coming out of the mailbox. All right, let's go. What are our 8 new tips?
I don't know. What are they?
All right, we'll start off with number one.
No, I'm just kidding. I know.
All right. So number one, this is, I think, coming more from me. Jeremy's going all analog. Well, I'm not. I really believe enough is enough, campground owners. Full service reservations during the off season or winter months. Enough already with calling and leaving messages. You have to be automated at this point. We are beyond that in this time, okay? So even though we personally recommend people call and talk to somebody about their reservations, I really believe that every single campground needs to be on an online reservation system.
Because what you're saying happens is that certain campgrounds, particularly in the Northeast, will close down November 1st and then like reopen March 1st.
Yeah.
So you like call and leave your request for a reservation, and it's like 4 months before they call you back. Like, that's not okay anymore.
In theory, you don't even know if you have a campsite or not.
Not in theory. In reality.
Right. Like, so the Flying Rafter that Kerry reviewed, right, in Mount Rushmore, that's their system. It's like, okay, after this date, it opens up and you can call and leave a message.
No, we're not saying, campground owners, we're not saying you can't take a vacation.
We get it.
We get it. You've been working hard all year.
Hard.
Get somebody to, you know, return those phone calls. Pay them.
No, you need an automated reservation system, just like the hotels have online,
Now, I made a reservation at a campground the other night for last summer. I called. There was a message, and it said, we are closed till March 1st. Before I hung up, the owner called me back.
Right. Yeah.
So I got the phone call back while I was still on the phone.
Yeah.
So when he said he was checking the messages, he meant it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just still think that everybody should be at least able to say, I know I have a reservation at this campground. Then you can call and leave a message about any particulars, right? And say, oh, I wanted to talk about the size of my rig, if this was a good site for me. I want it to be near the playground. I want it to be far away from the playground. You can still call and leave a message about those things. But you really should be able to secure a reservation in February anywhere in this country. Come on, people.
Number two is a really premium tip for campground owners, because I think ultimately this is not that expensive to implement. It'll take a little tech know-how or somebody to help you with that.
Not a lot, because Reserve America has it on their site.
Are you saying that Reserve America doesn't have tech know-how?
Oh, I love that.
We both think that every campground should have a photo of every site. And on their campground map, you should be able to click on the site and a photo opens up. Lots of people are doing this now, so there's no reason everybody can't do it. And look, today's discriminating RV traveler wants to see the site they're reserving. I think everybody does.
And they're going to start thinking. Here's the thing. The more campgrounds do this kind of stuff, the more campers get suspicious if you don't. It's like, you don't want me to see the site.
That's hilarious. This is just a plain old campground map. I can't click on and see the site.
Yeah.
What are they hiding?
What are you hiding? But I'm going to be realistic about this. Even if you have I would say medium-sized campground of 100 sites. You know, I'm pushing to the larger side too, right? 100 sites. It would take you one day to walk around with your cell phone and take a picture.
It'll take your nephew Joey one day
to walk around every site.
Stephanie's exactly right. Use your cell phone.
You use your cell phone. These do not have to be like, you know, amazing images. They can be iPhone images.
No
Those
professional
are good.
Photographer
right.
needed.
Go around. Take every single site, and then it will take a couple of days probably to get those, you know, to fit in the time to get those uploaded and put in on the individual site.
And dear campground owner,
it is an investment.
If the thought of this overwhelms you, you have a tech issue, I think, that you need to address. You have a larger tech issue.
Well, you should have somebody that can do this for you, because you should have a website, because you're a business. And so you should have a website, and you should have somebody running that website.
If you have a fifth grader as a child, they could probably do it for you.
Right. Find a local kid.
Are we getting snarky?
No, no. But these are certain things that the campground industry has deliberately, and I think almost like stubbornly stayed a little behind on. And I don't think that they're trying to compete with the hospitality industry, like hotels and cabins and vacation rental homes now, Airbnbs. You got to step up your game here, because I can go to an Airbnb, you know, where there's 10 pictures of the house that I'm renting.
The RV dealers, the good ones, will have 60 photos of the RV on their site. Like ad nauseum. Like,
well, and that's an issue. The RVs that have pictures on them sell. The RVs that don't have pictures.
Like RV Trader,
don't
their
sell.
Research shows that, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Number three, be completely upfront and honest about Wi-Fi and cell capacity. This one was Stephanie's idea, and I think it's so true. Nothing ticks people off more than being told they will have Wi-Fi in your advertising or on your website and showing up, and it just does not function.
I think so many RVers and campers understand that they're going to get a different level of Wi-Fi no matter where they are. I think having the knowledge of what you're going into is really the thing that matters. So most people at this point are looking to do basic operations when they're at a campground, just like email, whatever. So if they know in advance that they can't do that, it's almost like they can make a decision to be disconnected and probably be okay with that.
And get stuff done beforehand.
Exactly.
Let's play this scenario out. On your website, it says that you have Wi-Fi. Someone shows up who needs it for work or paying their mortgage or whatever, and it doesn't work. Now, the reason that you say there's Wi-Fi, even though you know it's not so great, is because you don't want to lose a reservation, right? But here's the thing. If somebody shows up and the Wi-Fi stinks and you told them they were going to have Wi-Fi,
it's gonna
you
be in
could
the
lose
review.
Dozens of reservations.
Because they're going to put that in
they're
the review.
They're going to be cranky.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to show up, and now people are reading that about your campground. Whereas if you put it on your website and you say, we do have Wi-Fi, but we're sorry, we are a remote campground and, you know, our antennas, you know, our satellites, whatever, we don't receive a very good signal. You may have to walk to the camp store to pick up a signal, something like that. I feel like people feel they're prepared. They understand what they're going to get when
they get there. Well, that's a great point, too. I mean, if your Wi-Fi is sporadic or if it's uneven, if you just say, hey, if you come up to the camp store, you'll have a strong signal, that's also helpful information.
Or have one Ethernet connection there in your camp store where, you know, like at Cherry Hill RV Park, they have this really nice little setup of two computers right there in Ethernet that you can plug in. And it just says, please be respectful that other people need to use the computers and limit your sessions to 10 to 15 minutes. I think it's such a great thing for a campground to offer.
Agreed. Number four, as a lot of campgrounds are going higher end, or at least a good number of them are moving towards the resort model, if you're not that campground, if you don't have that kind of money for water slides and really, really high-end activities and amenities, then you need to invest in low-tech recreation opportunities. We say all the time, if our boys were asked, hey, do you want to go to the $1 million water slide or go play an organized game of gaga ball or volleyball or basketball, they'd pick the organized game led by a recreation person.
Yeah, we just reviewed Branches of Niagara Falls, and we really raved about the fact that they had this rec program that was sort of very old school and like camp-like, and kids really respond to that. So gaga ball pits are always full when they're on campgrounds. Another thing, at Lake and Wood, there's a little tetherball thing there in that field, and kids are always at that silly little tetherball pole. You know, kids love those kinds of things nowadays.
They love organized games.
Yeah, give them things that they can kind of rally around and do together. And I think that that makes all the difference.
And train your staff, even if they're young staff, to enforce some basic rules and regulations and do the games the right way.
Yeah. And I also want to say that I would like to see more campgrounds stocking game rooms with activities other than video games. So the same concept. I would like to see, instead of these like expensive big video game units that then cost parents money and we all hate, I would like to see air hockey, foosball, ping pong tables, pool tables, those kinds of games that, yes, we all appreciate a game room if it's a rainy day or you've been out in the sun all day, but do something that's interactive and fun.
I'll give the kids $5 for air hockey.
Yeah.
Without blinking.
And they love
it. And they enjoy it. It's fun. It's competitive.
But it's a game they're playing together. They're not staring at a screen. Campground owners need to understand that parents, we're battling with screen time all the time. So give us a break from it. Don't put it in our faces at the campground.
In fact, Stephanie and Jeremy were battling with screen time just today.
Yeah, because it's new in our house and we're dealing with it. All right, so I don't want to deal with it at the campground.
Number five, pay attention to the check-in process. All right, first impressions are huge and you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. That's what I've been told.
I'm telling you, that entry into a campground, the amount of like decisions you make about the campground when you pull in, it's like amazing. You're just like, I'm going to like it here or I'm not going to like it here.
One thing we've loved in the past is certain campgrounds, and it's not that many of them, will direct you to your site, help you get into your site, and then say, hey, go in and, you know, you can check in as soon as you're all settled and comfortable. And boy, do we love that.
Yeah, it's a few campgrounds that do it. It makes all the difference in the world. Many RVers arrive after long drives and they have hungry or tired kids in the car. And campgrounds that really respect that and make that an easy process as opposed to a long and complicated process are, you know, really good. I also think that it's a shame that all campgrounds don't bring somebody to the site and back them in. I just think that that's a no-brainer and you need
to
do
that. It is so nice. It feels like such great service. And if there's any little quirks with the site, to have somebody knowledgeable guide you in, it is really nice. I mean, it's manpower and it's going to cost you a little money to do that. But it's terrific.
Another thing that RVers love is their little welcome packets. Like, RVers love to get the little, like, here's the area.
With the maps,
here's
and the
coupons, your brochure. Yeah.
And the takeout menu for that bad pizza joint.
Yeah. But sometimes you need that takeout because you just drove all day. You don't have anything. And, you know, I think that the campgrounds that do that really make, they win points on all of that. So I think that that welcome area have clear guidelines for where you should park your camper while you're checking in. Like, the whole thing needs to feel like, you feel like when you walk into a hotel, you go to the desk. You're checked in, your hand at the key.
You need to train your camp workers not to be stressed out when you're checking people in if the line gets backed up, because Stephanie already made the point. RVers can be stressed out when they show up after a long drive, and that's a bad combo.
You want to know what my idea is that nobody I haven't seen anywhere ever? Like, I think there should be like a basket of fruit there.
A, like, refreshing apple?
Yeah, or like little mini waters and a fruit and like apples in just a basket. That would be so cheap. But like, if we pulled into a campground and there was like apples and a little mini water, our kids would be like, oh, an apple and a mini water.
What about like a warm rag and like maybe they could dab you on the forehead with it?
Okay, well, massage? I'm serious. You're not. And I think that my idea is good. Like, I think a little touch like that would make like parents and kids all excited and it'd be like something healthy. But kids would love it because it was the campground giving it to them, you know. So
some sliced oranges? No, I do. I think it's a great idea.
A little clementine, something like that. I think it'd be great.
Okay, number six. This is huge, right? And so many campgrounds don't have this. It's actually shocking now that I think about it, how many places don't have this. Create a community hub. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. Sell local newspapers that people will come by in the morning. Offer coffee. You could sell the coffee if you need to. Consider offering free coffee in the morning or during a set hour or two.
One of the worst campgrounds we ever stayed at, you loved. Because they gave you free coffee.
And it was good, and I'd go back tomorrow.
You would. Like, you left. Like, you had this haze of, like, unreality about
all day long, free coffee. And it was good. It was not like Folgers. It was, like, good coffee.
Oh, my God.
And
there was nothing good about that campground.
Everybody hung out. Everybody hung out there. Give people a reason to hang out in your common area or in your camp store besides just buying stuff at the camp store.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Soft couches.
Porch furniture, the best campgrounds that we stayed at, they have those places where we're like to the kids, like almost like habitual. You'll be like, oh, do you want to go up and play checkers on the porch tonight? You know,
fireplace.
Television
for a rainy day. Mm-hmm. Old VCR with a bunch of those old VHS tapes.
Disney,
no, those things are nice.
Movies,
Cherry Hill in Washington, to reference them for a second time. They have such a lovely common area. And we got stuck on a cold, blustery, windy, rainy day, and we all enjoyed a lot of time in there.
Atlantic Oaks in Cape Cod has another great common room. I mean, we've really been to a lot of campgrounds.
They got a foot of snow.
Yeah, well.
In Cape Cod.
I'm sure that they were happy in that common room with the fire roaring. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
There was a picture of the Atlantic Oaks camp store in a under a foot of snow.
Go give them a follow on Instagram until you get to go meet them in person. It's a great campground.
Great campground in Cape Cod. Oh, my gosh. Doesn't get better than that.
Consider community campfires, et cetera. You know, all that
stuff.
Even
a community fire pit outside.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so no. Yeah, that's
common
what I mean.
Areas. People want to socialize. And RVers are happy people. So why not bring some of them together?
Fancy Gap KOI. Another example.
Gorgeous.
Of a
we played checkers outside at night
area.
On that porch.
They serve barbecue on the weekends. There's a lot of opportunity for campground owners when they do that too.
RVers love meeting and interacting with other RVers. Very few of us are antisocial. So find ways to bring the people on your campground together. And they don't have to be that costly to you.
They also like meeting and interacting with the campground owners, I feel like. And that's a really good opportunity for that to happen. If you're doing that barbecue or Christmas, you know, or ice cream, you know, handout. Like, people really like to meet the campground owners.
Let me tell you this. If you own a campground that's got a whole ton of problems and is not perfect and has this traffic noise or that on level site, but you're a friendly, engaged owner who's showing concern for your guests and trying to make them have a great time, people will forgive almost anything when you add the personal touch to your campground. Do you think I'm right?
Well, yes.
Somewhat.
Yeah, no, it has to be a good campground. Come on.
No, for me, honestly, if I went to a campground that was mediocre in every other way, but then the owners were super nice and considerate and helping us find the right restaurants or recommendations,
yeah,
it covers over a lot of sins to me.
All right, number 7, train all employees in customer satisfaction best practices and offer concierge services for campers. All right, seriously, get on the hotel bandwagon here. We people are more sophisticated travelers right now. The RVers have changed. It's not just campers. It's people that are traveling by RV instead of getting like a vacation home or staying in a hotel. So, you know, when you really have employees on the ground who understand that they need to be responsive to campers' questions, to their concerns, find answers for them.
And to your campground owner, if you're thinking, this is a campground, people are just camping, I don't need to provide this level of customer service. You know what? That ship has sailed. Yeah. I mean, the RV world has changed, and today's customers are willing to also pay more for this, by the way, for more discriminating service.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of the Fancy Gap KOA again here when I say that the first morning that I went in, I didn't even go in asking for recommendations. The wonderful woman behind the counter, she was like, do you have your day planned yet? And I was like, well, we're thinking of doing this or that. She was like, boom, 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 pulled out 4 things that she had all set up and gave me my spiel based on the fact that I had 3 kids in the camp store. She saw what they were. She listened to what I said. She gave me such a nice list of recommendations. And it's a lovely experience.
Well, the campground that I recently booked for the summer, the owner who called me back said, oh, we'll make sure you get to all the best things in the area. I didn't ask him. He just said that.
Yeah,
like, it's just part of what I do.
I'm
going to get you
to
the best hikes. I'm going to get you to all the best sightseeing in the area.
Yeah.
He says, like, make sure and, you know, say hello so I can tell you all those things.
Right. So, I mean, that really is a wonderful experience. Make sure you have somebody behind the desk that knows the area. If you have camp workers, then they need to know the area, even if they're new to it and everything. You need to train them to be able to give recommendations. There's nothing worse than asking for recommendations and having somebody be like, yeah, I don't really know the area very well.
As an add-on point here, send your staff to all of the major local activities and all of the major local sites to say. At the Lake Placid KOA, Chip and Julie Grunden told me that they send their camp workers to do all of the things that they're eventually going to recommend to guests.
Yeah.
And the number of times we go to a campground and we ask somebody for information about this hike or this activity, and they're like, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just here working. You know, it's disappointing, frankly.
Yeah. Also work with local businesses to make sure that you offer your guests some of those coupons and discount codes and everything, right? So make an effort. People love coupons, right? So reach out to local businesses and say, hey, do you have a buy one, get one? Because a lot of the time they have those coupons in those kids stuff books or whatever. Well, just get them from the business and have them sitting there at your desk. And honestly, like, visitors are going to really love that if you offer them some sort of discount for buying a ticket from you or something. They love that stuff.
Absolutely. Number 8, this one's huge. Campground owners, do you want to make more money? Because if you do, you need to stay open later into the fall and you need to open earlier in the spring. Because guess what? Today's RV owner wants to camp into November in the Northeast, and they want to start their camping season in March in the Northeast and other chillier places. The campground owners in the Northeast that shut down November 1st to me, I mean, I know you're probably tired and exhausted and want the break, but you're leaving a lot of money on the table because people want to keep taking their RVs out. And people's modern RVs are able to keep them warm and cozy into the winter.
RVs are more comfortable. They're more luxurious. They're more appointed like homes. And people are more willing to treat them as such. And they are spending Thanksgiving, Christmas. They're spending their spring break in their RVs. So if, you know, in our area, we do see in the Northeast, we see campgrounds that are doing this, even in cold climate.
Popping up here and there.
They're doing it.
I mean, 30 years ago. There was a huge number of RVers who were in pop-up campers, mm-hmm. and they would not camp up to Thanksgiving or Christmas. But guess what? Not a lot of pop-ups being sold right now. Most people are in some kind of hard-sided travel trailer that has a furnace and can keep them warm. So you're losing business if you don't stay open. I think in the Northeast, people should stay open till at least Thanksgiving and consider even staying open into early December.
Right. And if they can, and if it's a little bit south, I would say go through the new year because more people are loving to spend even their holidays there, and then they're willing to shut it down.
But when do
for
these
January.
Poor campground owners get a break?
I can't with that. I don't know. When do I get a break?
Stephanie doesn't get a break.
I don't know.
Well, no, obviously it's a personal decision if you want Christmas off. But if you want to make more money in your business, we think people will camp in December. If you do themed Christmas weekends and you're seeing more and more of that in warmer locations, I think over time it will change in the Northeast and other colder locations as well.
All right. So coming up in our next segment, we are so thrilled to have Dan and Aaron Theme of the In-Town Campground in Nevada City, California.
The owners, the proprietors, the visionaries behind the In-Town Campground.
This is their third time on the show with us. We started talking with Dan and Aaron back before their campground was even built. We've watched them build a campground and open a campground, and now they've gone through their first season and a very successful season at that.
For non-correspondents, your second time on the show, you become a friend of the show. Your third time on the show, you become RVFTA royalty. And that's Dan and Aaron. So stay tuned to listen to a great interview with them about outdoor hospitality. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are incredibly excited to be here with Dan and Aaron Theme. It's their third time on this podcast, which makes them very, very special to us. They are the entrepreneurs and visionaries behind the In-Town Campground in Nevada City, California, and they're going to talk to us all about campground hospitality. But first, a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
Jayco wants you to know about their new Ultralight Hummingbird. It's the newest addition to the Jayco lineup of travel trailers. Weighing in at about 3,000 pounds and packed with features and modern conveniences, it's the definition of towable fun. Get up and go and leave your worries behind with the Hummingbird, which comes with the industry's best 2-year limited warranty. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
All right. Now, Dan and Aaron, welcome to the show. Dan, you went to a conference recently all about campground hospitality. So we just knew we had to get you on the show for some insights from both of you. So just tell us what this conference was and where it was.
So this conference was the Association of RV Parks and Campgrounds annual conference, and it was in Fort Worth, Texas this year. And for us, this was the first time we've had a chance to attend it, which, you know, being new campground owners, was a great way for us to get some insight into the private campground world and other owners, you know, different issues and challenges surrounding the industry and just new ways of approaching the business, I guess.
Yeah, and you guys are just such amazing business owners that you not only went to this conference, but then you also thought about what you learned, you put it down in a bunch of notes, and you offered to share it with us. So that's really great. And I think it's a mark of why you guys were able to open a campground and have a successful first year. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Dan and Aaron are smart.
They are.
They're smarties. They do their homework. They think about this stuff. They're intellectual campground owners.
Yeah, it's no joke. So let's start off with the people that were at this conference. You really, I think, networked with a lot of folks at the conference, and you said you had a couple of takeaways about that. What were they?
I mean, there were a number of different takeaways. The majority of the attendees were, you know, fellow campground owners or managers of different parks, and they ranged in size. I mean, we might have even been the smallest in terms of the number of RV sites to some that were 400 or 500 sites over hundreds of acres. So there was a huge spectrum of people that attended the conference, which, of course, made it really fascinating for me to see the different ways people handle their businesses. The main takeaways I had, and I've kind of bullet pointed them, are, you know, first and foremost, the commonality with which people in the industry approach their businesses and the underlying goals that we all have are so similar. I was really, really surprised by that.
So we'll dive into that. I mean, because you're saying you had large campground owners, smaller campground owners, and that's very intriguing to me that you found this overarching common ground. What was that common ground that you found?
I mean, fundamentally, it's the idea that we all love camping. We all love the experience that we're providing the guests. So, I mean, it was really surprising to me how enthusiastic and energetic the managers and owners were. I mean, they were just genuinely excited about their businesses. And having worked in different industries throughout my career, I have to say, this is the first time I've ever been to a group of like-minded people who are like, yeah, this industry rules. We love this.
Yeah, so I really think that cool. You're picking up on something that I've heard from, you know, being in the RV industry. I think so many people say to me, I really love doing something that brings people happiness.
Yeah, and I think I might have even used those exact words in describing what we've gone through in building the in-town campground to various guests over the last, you know, 6 or 7 months. Is that it's just fun going around on a Friday night when everybody's finally settled in and seeing that they're just having a good time. It's like you're providing joy to people, and that's really, you know, invigorating.
Now, the next thing that you told us that really stood out to you was not surprising, because it seems like every takeaway of any conference right now in America has the word millennial in it, right?
We have
to talk about that.
Even at the AARP convention, yeah, it's like there's a talk about millennials.
So what?
Those rare birds.
What is the campground industry thinking about these millennials? And are they kind of using the term? I'm going to editorialize here a little bit, but I want your feedback on this. Are they kind of using the term a little indiscriminately? In other words, for AKA not senior, right? Like, I feel like the Gen Xers, who are a big part of this market, are being left out of the conversation a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute observation. Millennial has definitely, in my opinion, become a bit of a buzzword. And I mean, it's the, you know, as big or bigger than the baby boomer generation. So it's awfully hard to generalize, you know, who these people are. And, you know, we all have our unique experiences with what this mythical millennial person
is. But everybody knows they want their money.
Yeah,
and that is really the driving force there. The mythical millennial, we need to capture their spending dollar.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in the campground business, and maybe more specifically in the RV side of it, I think there's a concern that, I mean, obviously we've got an aging group of baby boomers who are your typical couple cruising around in a Class A from point A to point B. They might be snowbirds. How do you then transition the appeal of your campground to a younger, quite frankly, longer serving market? And you know, there was one interesting presentation at the conference that talked about how, you know, the goals of the baby boomers and the goals of the millennials, and again, in broad terms, are basically the same, but fundamentally how you meet those goals are completely different, and how you communicate to younger generations is completely different. So that, I mean, it was surprising in some respects, but in other respects, it seemed kind of like an obvious point. And maybe that's because we're just here in California, where we're kind of surrounded by very young techie people in our market that we serve. So it seemed pretty clear to us that that shift was already happening and was basically fundamental to us, you know, being successful in our business.
Okay. So is that, Dan, you pointing to the goals being what people are looking for out of a campground experience? Maybe, you know, the experience, the connection, the,
how it's shared.
The time together.
I mean, baby boomers want a campfire and they want nature and they want beauty and they want to have fun. And so does a 20-year-old.
And so does it, right.
But they're sharing the experience in profoundly different ways. And thus the experience needs to be communicated to them beforehand in very different ways. Right? I mean, I'm looking at your notes here, that it didn't strike me as obvious, but I think it's all about the communication before and then the communication that they want to have during the experience.
I think that last point, I mean, it's both really, because how they get their information and how you market to them is totally different. You know, we get people who come through the campground now that say, well, how come you're not in such and such catalog or brochure? And then we get others who say, oh, yeah, I found you on Instagram. I've been following you for, you know, 3 years now. And yet they're here doing the exact same thing. And in some cases, you know, going back to your point, Stephanie, about, you know, the lost Gen Xers, that kind of middle ground, they might even be the same age and from the same place. So there's this kind of amorphous change that's happening. And it's, you know, it's not black and white, like, you know, the presentations at the conferences like to make you think.
Right. You know, but, so in other words, you really need to be in both spaces right now. That's your challenge as a camper. You have to both be serving the population that is still used to finding you in directories and also serving the population who's comfortable in the digital world and sort of forming that community of travel.
Yeah, you have to be in both places. And I might have Aaron chime in on this because even though you're in both places, the experience and the way that you're communicating to them, and more importantly, what they do with that experience after they've come is very different. And so, you know, I know Erin and her marketing and the engagement online, it's far more important for, you know, the millennials, quote unquote, to share their experience once they've gone through it. And it's almost like a bragging right. You know, you take a picture of yourself on Instagram. Look where I am. Look what I'm doing. And it's sort of this vicarious living that they do with their friends and all their experiences.
Aaron, I want you to comment on that marketing. And I'm wondering for you guys, I've seen your social media efforts. And I, you know, I know there's sweat equity there, not necessarily a price you're paying dollar-wise, but the time you're putting into social media, and you've done such a really nice, sophisticated job of it. Is it more challenging to appeal to the older people in these print directories that cost more money to get into? Like, compare those two marketing experiences for us.
Well, I think that we haven't really done enough in the old style print advertisement paid directories. I think that we've approached it more of the grassroots online. And I feel like the community that we've created that have been excited about us have been enthusiastic about sharing the process of building the campground. And that's all been authentic in the social media interactions. So I feel like we have room for improvement in getting into these directories and going more of the, I don't know, old school, but more traditional means. I feel like I skipped that step and went
It costs money too, right? Yeah. I mean, isn't that part of the equation?
Yeah.
Yeah. It costs a lot more money, and you're not necessarily guaranteed that you're going to hit your specific market segment. So, although it's really important, particularly in the RV crowd, and I'd say one of the takeaways we've certainly taken from this first year is we need to, as a business, do a better job of that. Because, you know, although our glamping segment, if you will, is very interconnected in social media, the RVers, there's a much smaller percentage that are. So we need to spend some time looking back at our marketing strategies and figure out, okay, how do we connect with the RV community a little better?
Now, I think most campgrounds have the opposite problem that you have. I think that most campgrounds are in all the directories and they're writing the checks and they're getting the ads in and they have no social media presence.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that at the conference, there were a lot who almost looked like scared. You know, there were several sessions or seminars that talked about social media and engagement and even how that relates to print advertising and connecting the two in your messaging and all that. And there were a lot of people who were just kind of overwhelmed by it. And it is an overwhelming process. I mean, you guys know you are very active on social media, and it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of understanding of how it works to feel comfortable about using it in a productive way.
Yeah. Now, the word authentic already came up in our discussion, but you also noted that, you know, people are really looking for an authentic experience. And this, you know, this is just an addendum, right, to what we've already been talking about, what people are looking for when they show up at a campground and that experience. So what do you mean by an authentic experience, and what do you think that looks like at your campground?
So this is another point of commonality again that most campground owners kind of expressed. And the way I took it was people don't want a contrived experience. You know, they're not necessarily looking for an amusement park, you know, where things are too perfect or too orderly. They want, you know, an experience that reflects kind of a basic sense of who they are and the values that they have. And so, you know, one of the things that's important to mention in that is, of course, that changes with whatever market you're in and what part of the country you're in. And so that's not necessarily going to be the same. In fact, it won't be the same for any one campground. But for us at the InTown Campground, I think people's sense of authenticity is, I mean, it's hard to define in words, I guess.
Californian. Well, how about that for one?
I think I can answer that question. I think that one of the things that Dan has noticed that he's really enjoyed being at the campground and interacting with the campers is that the people want to feel like they're a part of our community. And so we've made a real conscious effort to create community dwellings within the campground, but also to make them feel like they're a part of the community at large of Nevada City and the amenities and features and events and things to do in our community as well. And so by providing them the resources and availability for those community events and experiences, then they feel like they got to be a part of Nevada City for a day or a weekend or a week or however long that they come and stay with us.
And Aaron, that is exactly why you guys are on this episode with us, because that is one of our tips for campground owners that we have in the other segment. Creating that sense of community in all of our travels is one of the things that stands out as creating a truly amazing campground experience.
Yeah, and I think, Aaron, you're the secret weapon there, aren't you, in terms of linking your campground to the community. Could you just like briefly comment on that? And that's a big takeaway for other campground owners. There's a link between you guys and that community that's very strong.
I mean, I think it helps that we were already business owners in our community and established and have a blog and promote things to do in our area.
I guess for us, it's what we believe. It's who we are. So, you know, we don't have to sell it, if that makes sense. You know, we believe in our small town. We believe in making sure that everybody's successful and that we are all kind of in this together, because we are this small little town in California. And it takes everybody, you know, it takes the village to make it work. And, I mean, I'll give you just a little sort of anecdote. We had a camper, and it must have been 2 months ago or so, who had come in, and it's been pretty, you know, slowed down as the winters come on. And they pulled up, and one of our front office staff was kind of showing them the commons and the facilities in there, and just said, "Well, go park your RV, come on, make yourself at home." And the person stopped and said, "I have never once in my life been told, make yourself at home at a campground." And they were really touched by that, because it made them feel like, whoa, they really want us to be a part of this.
And I think that that does move us nicely to your next takeaway also, because this is your home. This is, you know, this place is deeply rooted in your experience as a family, and you're sharing that with your, you know, visiting guests, because you said that there was a real emphasis at this conference at like sort of creating, you know, communicating the campground owner's experience and who the campground owners are, and really creating that sense that you're entering their community and their home and they're sharing it with
you. And entering your story.
Almost like a B&B kind of a thing, right?
Right, it kind of is. And that was, you know, a follow-on from the millennial discussions at the conference was one of the things that's very, very important to this newer generation of campers is partaking or being involved in experiences that have some greater purpose. So for them, it's not necessarily about stuff. It's not necessarily about acquisition. It's more about the experience and the meaning behind the experience. And for the camping industry, that just is a perfect synergy because all of these campgrounds have amazing stories. And I felt like the new kid on the block. I mean, basically we were the new kid on the block at this conference. There were many that had been in operation for 60, 70 years, you know, third generation. And it was really cool talking to these people. It's like, I remember when my grandpa was building this cabin, you know, up in Minnesota way back in the day. And you can just see how people get really engaged in that story. Now, the challenge, of course, is communicating that to people so that they then become a part of the story also.
It's sort of the polar opposite of the bland, boring chain hotel or the bland, boring chain corporate anything. I mean, the campgrounds are so unique. Even if you're talking about KOA or Jellystone or something like that, all the campgrounds are totally different at the end of the day because of geography.
Right. And that's a really important point. Every campground has its own unique features. And even if you are part of a franchise or, you know, some larger organization, they're all still owned, I mean, for the most part, by individuals or families.
Yeah, that's something that we've really tried so hard on our podcast to communicate with people, that by staying at campgrounds, you are so often directly serving the local economy. Like these are, we see so many campgrounds as mom and pop operations, really.
I think they are. And I think what's really appealing, I mean, this is maybe just my personal view, is that there's so much in our world that is homogenized now. You know, you can basically go to any mall in America and see the same stores, that when you get an opportunity to experience something that's unique and different and you're not going to find it down the road, I think people really embrace that and they really like it because it's not something that they're going to find down the road.
And thus something they can share on Instagram and take some, I don't know if pride is the right word in,
props.
But take some props. Look where I am.
You know, and it looks different than where
I'm going for a walk through the Chinese cemetery right next to the in-town campground, and there's nowhere else like that, period.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And Aaron, I know that you're really like that. Making an effort to do that in a lot of the small local touches in the campground, like you're doing your wine tastings, right? And you have your branded coffee, like things like that to me, really, I can't wait to experience them myself at your campground and see what that feels like.
We would welcome you any day.
Oh, I know. If there weren't 3,000 miles between us, right? Yes. We'd be there. We'd be there right now doing this interview in person. I promise. Now, Dan, one of your takeaways surprised me. I mean, a lot of these, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, definitely, I see that. But when I was really surprised that you said there was such a youthful population at this conference.
That I was equally, probably more surprised than anybody about that, because in my mind, I had this preconception that the RVing industry was kind of older, maybe even a little tired in some ways. And I went to this conference and I couldn't believe how many young people were involved. And it was really cool. They were just, I mean, we're talking about, you know, connecting with millennials, but there were a good number of them that were actually there running these businesses or certainly involved in the management of these businesses. So I was really encouraged by that from an industry standpoint. And it made me really think, okay, you know, this, I've got to rethink my preconceptions here because clearly there's a young shift that is really taking place.
Well, and what a inspiring, sort of revelation for you too, because there's nothing like networking, right? To really like, you know, just bring that energy to an entrepreneur. It's hard toiling away, you know, for long hours for a passion. But when you connect with other people who are doing the same thing and excited about it, I really think it brings you that renewed energy. So that's probably on a personal level, very encouraging.
It definitely was. I mean, there's just certain things that, as any business owner, or I guess any person in any job, it's just really helpful to have other people to communicate with who understand the challenges that you're going through and also can appreciate the successes that you enjoy over time. And, you know, being new to this business, it was really helpful for me. I certainly appreciated it.
All right. So all these young people at the conference talking about connectivity at the campground.
Right?
I mean, obviously it's a structural issue. It's a social issue. It had to be one of the big talking points, right?
Yeah. Well, there were, of course, the two camps. There's, you know, pun intended. I think I even wrote that in my notes.
when you got a good pun, you go with it, Dan. It's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, you just got to
even if you have a bad one,
yeah,
I'm always willing to run with it.
Own it.
So there are those who absolutely detest the idea of being connected at the campground. You know, the old school, no way, I'm going camping, put your device down, I don't want to be connected. And then there are the others who, you know, it's like having a bathroom. You've got to have Wi-Fi. So I think, you know, for us serving the Bay Area, in our particular situation, it's not even a question of if, but how broad and what's the bandwidth when we talk about providing connectivity. But then, you know, the follow-on of that is not do you just allow them to connect, but how do you interact with them while they're on site? And what do you provide or what experience do you provide that allows them to connect with their individual network of people?
Can you go into more detail about some of the things that you guys have considered in terms of how you communicate with them while they're on site?
You know, that's a hard question because it's one that we haven't really settled on a strategy yet. And we're, you know, for all of the work we do before they get here and after they leave, we're not great while they're on site. I mean, they're great at Instagramming their yoga on the glamping tent decks or, you know, doing pull-ups off a tree or whatever they might want to show, but we don't engage very well with them while they're on site.
You walk around, Dan. You said you love walking around on Friday.
Well,
I mean,
sorry,
at a certain point,
he means digital.
No, I know what he means, sure, but yeah. At a certain point, I think you're personally connecting with them while they're there.
Oh, absolutely. And I credit my manager, Jed, with this because he told me very early on, he said, Dan, your job is to go around and walk and talk with the guests. And, you know, you get caught up with the operation, of course, and you forget about that. And so when I started doing that, I mean, just the stories and the people we meet have been so incredible. I mean, it's like you meet a new set of friends every weekend. It's just great.
Now, Aaron, it sounded like you wanted to chime in on the connection while people are there. So I want to give you the opportunity.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile to say that Dan doesn't actually do the campground's Instagram feed. So he's not actively engaging with people. But I love trolling through our feed to see the people who have used the location, geolocation for the campground or hashtag the campground or tag us while they're planning their trip or while they're in Nevada City. So I am definitely interacting with their customers on social
and
media.
And you're crowdsourcing those photos, right? And then using them on your own account, of course.
Of course. Because they're just as enthusiastic about the campground as we are. So I feel like, and we've had people post pictures on Facebook. Our first opening weekend, I was so tickled. We had this family that stayed in a glamping tent that had decorated it all in the 4th of July decor. And the mom sent me a picture of her three daughters all dressed up in their red and white and blue. And it was like, not only are they enthusiastic about being here, but they're sharing their photos with me and so I can share them with our audience. So.
And you can't pay for
no.
that.
No, yeah, it's
there's
true.
There's no price tag for that. And when you think about, oh, I have to pay this many thousands of dollars to get an ad in a catalog, you know, those pictures are a lot more exciting and valuable in a sense.
Because they tell the real story. They really do. They tell the true story. Both are important. It's important, you know, all of the pre-promotional work that Aaron did in terms of staging at the campground to show people their vision was important. But then now to tell the real story, that authentic story is important too.
I think 9 out of 10 campgrounds or 99 out of 100 do not share photos that their guests take on social media while they're there. And I think they're really missing the boat on that.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with the authenticity. Like I love the people that stay at the Outside In our motel and they go, oh, the rooms actually look like the pictures on the website. And I'm always like, well, I would hope so. So I want to be able to give our campers that same information by like, oh, this campsite actually looks like the campsite pictures on the website.
So. Yeah. Now, those were great, really interesting educational takeaways from a consumer, right? A camper viewpoint also. So thank you for sharing those with us. But we also want to kind of quickly hear, you know, your year one, end of camping season one reflection. You know, what things did you do because of this sort of hospitality philosophy that worked really well? You've already mentioned some of them, you know, like the, I think the communal spaces. And what things are you kind of still going, what are we going to do for next year? Do you have anything to share with us?
We do. So in terms of the things that worked well, I'd say probably the number one feedback we've gotten overall is people really appreciate our attention to details. And that was something we had really strived very hard to do. And a lot of those details are things like, you know, how you decorate the tents, but also, you know, operational details like, you know, what's in the kitchen, for example, you know, how do you stock it? What pots and pans do people have? And people were really surprised that we had thought as hard as we had about, you know, their experience and how they might use the space or the campground in different ways. So that I feel like was a really nice, I don't know, reassurance about some of the things we had started on.
Success. I think, yeah, success. Yeah. Good job.
And by caring about the details, it shows that you care about your campground and you care about your guest, and it just spreads all that kind of lovey good vibrations mm-hmm. around.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I really enjoyed was the sense of community, which we've already talked about. But it was really great to see campers enjoying that sense of community and you know, going into their communal kitchen and seeing different people who didn't know each other, like engaging and talking to each other and working in a communal space in a nice, harmonious way. Or the families that sat around the outdoor movie screening this summer just having a really great weekend experience. So we really felt that our campers got that opportunity that we strived really hard to create.
So what are we working on for next year? What are we going to fix?
I mean, there's a number of things. We're, you know, right now we're going through our activities. So that's something we did not do particularly well this last year. I think we just didn't get time to really think about it. So we're coming up with a whole activity program and schedule or calendar that we'll work on. Probably, you know, starting sometime in Memorial Day. So that one's kind of one of the original ones.
The other thing that we have to continually work on is our visitor policies. We're working on our swimming pool. It should be done by the beginning of summer. And so we're a little concerned about the number of people who might want to come and hang out at our campground who are not actual campers. So we're working on the terms and conditions and educating the people of our community and the campers at the campground on that.
So you want to keep everybody happy, but you don't want 100 people that are not registered on the campground diving in the pool all at the same time.
Yeah, well, we want to make sure that, you know, the experience is still enjoyable for everybody and that, you know, what they're expecting is what they get. It's the old managing expectations. And so in order to do that, we kind of have to know, for example, how many people are using the facilities and making sure that, you know, we don't overstretch it and ruin the experience for most people by just not paying attention to some of those operational details.
And I know that you guys are always open for feedback. So if any of our listeners, like, you know, just have had experiences with, I would even say good visiting policies, right? Like what kind of visiting policies have really worked for you? Or, you know, on the flip side, what kind of visiting policies have really put a cramp in your style. I'm sure that Dan and Aaron would love to hear about them on their social media
shoot us an email, ours or on post our something forum. On their Instagram account. Now, guys, one of the big takeaways for me was that campground owners need to provide a very unique experience and a unique geography upon which to have that experience. So just tell us, why should we come book a vacation with you? What makes the in-town campground unique both experientially and geographically?
So geographically, we're in a very interesting part of California. We're in the Sierra foothills in one of the original gold mining towns. So there's a lot of history in our particular area. But we're also kind of the gateway to the South Yuba River, which is one of California's classic river systems. And in the summertime, it's this beautiful, you know, mecca of blue water and huge granite boulders that you can sit and relax on. And I would say probably 80% of the people that come to our town in some way go visit the river in the summertime. So
they don't have to just go in the summer. It's gorgeous at this time of year.
It is. Yeah, it is gorgeous this time of year also. But then going on and following with that, with the history of the area, our particular property is fascinating because it's this, I guess, pine and cedar forest right in the middle of town. And it surprises just about every person that comes that we're, you know, less than a mile or about a mile walking distance, and yet you're in this beautiful forest on an old gold mining property. And it's got the Chinese cemetery, which has some really interesting historical features in it. And so you can't find those sorts of properties in that proximity to town and probably anywhere near us in California, would be my guess. We certainly couldn't find one except for this.
Well, it looks like a beautiful, beautiful campground on that social media channel that Aaron keeps up to date all the time and interactive and very authentic. So we hope all of our listeners, if they're headed through that area, stop by and say hey.
And where can we find you online?
Our website is intowncampground.com, and we're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Intown Campground. And I will say that we have had an opportunity to meet some of your podcast listeners while we've been in business, and it's always such a treat to meet them.
And they're always so attractive and intelligent, too. And that's
the cream of the crop.
Sort of shocks me. It's just good-looking people.
All right. Well, Dan and Aaron, this is your third time on the show, and we know that there will be
a fourth time. This will be an ongoing conversation.
We love having you on. We learn so much from you, and we also just appreciate all the hard work that you're doing to make these wonderful camping opportunities possible for our RVing audience. So the best of luck in your second year, and we can't wait to talk to you again.
Talk to you soon,
guys. All right. Thanks,
guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us for episode 124 of RV Family Travel Atlas, 8 more tips for campground owners. And remember, the first time we did a show like this was episode 5. It was a long time ago. Big thanks to Dan and Aaron Thiem of the InTown Campground. Please throw them a follow on Instagram or Facebook or wherever you get your social media fix. And a big thank you to the Thetford Corporation, to Jayco, and to Campgrounds of America.
And to Progressive Insurance. Adding an RV policy to another policy like a home, auto, motorcycle, or boat is a great way to save time and money. Get on the road to savings by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV to learn more. And to learn more about tips for campground owners, you can hear from everybody else in the RVFTA community by tuning in to RVFTA Live, 3 p.m. Eastern Time,
and
Friday.
Hopefully Stephanie won't say a naughty word tomorrow during the Facebook Live, because she did during the recording of this show, and I know she's going to edit it out.
Of course I am. That's the first time I've ever done that.
But my jaw dropped. I was shocked. So hopefully you don't do that when we go live. Friday.
I've never done 3 it.
3 p.m. And bring your ideas and your tips for campground owners, and we'll have a really lively discussion just like we did last week, plus a great giveaway.
See you at the campground.
See you at the campground.